This is the Rich Eisen Show.
You know what was another surprise to me? Lamar Jackson.
Jackson takes the snap. Fires to the end zone. Touchdown, Rashad Bateman.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
How's your wife's hands doing?
Okay, the guy walked in the arena. Everybody cheered. She gave him the finger. Nobody got arrested.
Earlier on the show, Eagles center Jason Kelce. Coming up, NFL Network insider Tom Pelissero. Wrestling Hall of Famer Ric Flair. Pro Football Hall of Famer Rod Woodson. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Hour number two of the Rich Eisen Show is on the air. I just had a great chat in our green room with Ric Flair. He is here. He is here. He is the nature boy is in our green room right now. So I should also mention that we're about to Zoom and get some top-notch information from NFL Network insider Tom Pelissero. Woo! Right? Hour number three, Hall of Famer and one of the voices of Ravens radio, because we were very Bengals heavy at the top. We'll talk about the Ravens side of things in the Week 11 kickoff with Rod Woodson. Woodson. And TJ Jefferson.
Let's do this all day.
You're not ready yet? You're not ready? He's not ready. He's
hey, it's time to tie.
Oh, God.
It's time to tie.
Oh, my goodness.
You got this, TJ.
You got it, TJ.
Take your time. No rush.
Very good. Oh, no, it's all right. Take your time. Let's
Tom Pelissero here.
Tom's checking in.
He's almost checking in?
Yeah.
Is he working on his hand? Is he drawing?
He might have a carpal tunnel thing on.
Is that a drawing? He's got his drawing glove is on?
Yeah, it's drawing glove. Get out of here.
Joining us here now on the Rich Eisen Show, my colleague, his usual Friday spot from the NFL Network, NFL Media Group, Tom Pelissero. Good to see you, Tom.
Good to see you, Rich.
What was Joe Burrow wearing on his hand coming off of, a team vehicle of some sort? On Friday, Wednesday? What's going on, Tom? What was that all about?
I mean, I've seen the same Zapruder film that you have, Rich. It does look like it's a pretty common device that you would use if you're dealing with, you know, wrist pain on the thumb side of things. I didn't even realize just kind of how much that had been sent around the internet prior to Joe Burrow then suffering the wrist injury and having to drop out of that game last night. I would say this. You know, the NFL every year, there's always sort of touchstone moments where whether it is a sportsmanship issue like earlier this year when they sent the thing about pregame fights or whether it is potential manipulations of injury reports where the league says enough is enough and they punish somebody and they send a memo to everyone going, hey, if you do this now, it's going to be worse. This might be that moment for the injury reports just because it looks like fairly blatant that something was going on with his wrist here. Plus it's a quarterback. It's a nationally televised game. They'll go through the normal process. They always review these, but I would not be surprised if there's some type of a sanction that ends up coming down for the Bengals.
What if it was really a drawing glove for an iPad? Will they want to see what he was drawing? What was he drawing? Like a cat, maybe a Bengal? You know what I mean? Will they want to see the actual artwork, Tom?
I thought based on the leather jacket he was wearing with it, it might've been like a leftover Michael Jackson Halloween costume.
Okay.
And that was the glove. That's where my brain was going. But iPad drawing glove, yeah, that's a totally normal thing. It could be. I don't know. I don't own one.
We have the photograph of it? I think, honestly, Tom, I mean, the number of Bengals fans were like, you know, everybody's barking up the wrong tree here. And it would stand a reason why Zach Taylor's like, yeah, but the first I heard about it was when he got hurt on the field. But you could see it does actually look quite a bit like the glove that he was wearing coming off the bus, Tom. To be straight up with it.
And certainly could be. Mm-hmm. And we'll find out. That's why the league will review all the practice reports and the medical reports and photos and videos and everything else here. But again, if they in fact find that there was any type of a violation, he had any pre-existing injury, then I would not be surprised at all if this ends up being that moment where they decide to send a message by punishing somebody.
Tom Pelissero here on the Rich Eisen Show. And let's get to what he is actually suffering from right now. What is it?
Zach Taylor called it a wrist sprain, not believed to be anything that's broken, but obviously it was sufficient that it impacted his ability even to grasp the football. I mean, I was struck by, Rich, the image on the sideline of him just trying to even, you know, cock the ball back and throw it. And it's like the ball comes loose before he could even begin to bring the arm forward. You know, that would tell you that he's dealing with something significant enough here that he was not going to be able to go back into that game. So at this point, I would fairly say that people are bracing for this to be something that keeps Joe Burrow out for at least a little bit of time here. We also know that Joe Burrow, his competitive nature, how he handles his body, the way that he pushed through the calf, that if there's a way physically possible for him to tape it up or wear a brace or wear his iPad drawing glove on the field, whatever it might be, then he's going to go ahead and do that. I don't put anything past Joe Burrow here, but again, he was getting an MRI. I think that already happened this morning here. You're always going to go out and get second opinions on things like this. And the fact they played it Thursday night gives him a little bit more time here to kind of go through that process and try to make some final determinations over the weekend.
And the other conversation to be had coming out of the game involving the league and those certainly on the competition committee involves the dreaded hip drop tackle that we saw used by Logan Wilson, who was a one-man wrecking crew against the Ravens last night. And Mark Andrews is out for the season with an ankle injury. What is the status of this conversation, and do you think last night's game will fuel any more talk about getting this out of the game?
Anytime you have something this high profile, it's bound to drive the conversation a little bit because the competition committee is made up of coaches and there's front office people and there's different conversations, and you know, they see the same things that we do. You know, last year the competition committee considered this, and part of the conversation there was the NFL Players Association publicly and privately was against banning that particular tackle. And that's based on a couple of things. One is enforceability, which is you can look at the tackle on Mark Andrews and say, okay, that's a blatant dangerous type of tackle. This is what the league's been talking about with the far higher injury rate. Then you look at the same player, Logan Wilson, who tackles Lamar Jackson at the sideline, and that's kind of like a half hip drop tackle. Lamar's ankle ends up getting trapped under it. He's limping around in the game. You know, we'll find out if that's a high ankle sprain or something he's going to be able to work his way through here. But, you know, that play, okay, one is clear black and white. The one on the sideline is much closer. Do you want to have officials then throwing flags for that? Do we want to introduce another thing that they're supposed to be looking for? So that's one of the reasons the PA was against it. The second reason was because the reason that you have more of these techniques in terms of wrapping up, for instance, around the waist and pulling a player down is because you can't go up higher. You can't do a lot of the traditional tackling techniques, even though they may not have been safe, but anything that involves lowering a shoulder, lowering the helmet, you run the risk of getting penalized for use of helmet or more likely being fined for it. So there's certainly, I think we all look at that play, Rich, and say, we don't want that in the game. I mean, you can see it's high ankle sprains and it's snapped ankles. And in Mark Andrews' case, it may well have been both. We don't want to have those types of injuries occur. But there is another side of this, and it's notable that the body, the union that is there to protect the players, was actually against outlawing this. They're going to have to find a way, if they are going to ban it, to create language that is clear for officials to actually be able to officiate this and not add one more thing, Rich, that we all sit back, watch on TV and go, well, that looked like that might have been. Was this the – you want to eliminate all the ambiguity you can.
Tom Pelissero here on the Rich Eisen Show, and I'll bring up this subject matter with Rod Woodson, an all-pro, all-world Hall of Fame defender later on in the program. Let's hit the Cleveland Browns here. Why DTR? What was their thought process to go with Dorian Thompson-Robinson here, Tom?
Well, the thought all along, Rich, was that Dorian Thompson-Robinson going into the season was going to be the number two quarterback behind Deshaun Watson. That's why they traded away Josh Dobbs when they did late in the preseason, was because they felt like DTR had earned the role. So, you know, why now versus P.J. Walker? There were some giveaways that P.J. Walker had. There was the one in Seattle where you're just hoping, hey, we got a really good defense, we can run the football, just don't put us in those spots. Even the game that P.J. Walker won, the first one, in place of Deshaun Watson, he made a throw late in that game that should have been picked off and probably could have cost him the game. They want to make sure they're, number one, giving DTR that opportunity, but number two, playing the guy who's not going to allow the quarterback position to lose the games. You go back to the evaluation of DTR coming out of UCLA. He had played like 50 games in college, one of those COVID guys who had the extra year and, you know, started. He broke every record because part because he played so many games, but also because he was a really good quarterback. The reason that he slid down was not about talent. He went in the fifth round because there were a lot of things, particularly going back to his junior year at UCLA, where it was maturity. It was, this guy is all caught up in social media. He's not the type of leader we want in the program. For everything that was said about him prior to that in 2022, everybody said he actually improved as a passer. He improved as a leader, his maturity, all that in 2022. The Browns were willing to take the chance on that. Well, now you get into this spot. He does bring some different things to the table. I talked to Amari Cooper about it yesterday. He said, hey, you know he can run. We know he can sling it, but he's still a young player. That's what the Browns are getting here. Figure out, you know that, okay, the floor might be really low. You saw it when he started very last minute, but let's give him a full week of reps, a full week to understand you're going to be the guy, design a game plan about what you do best, and maybe there's more upside that can help this team as the Browns try to make a playoff push.
What's your 2 cents on the move to bounce Ken Dorsey and put in Joe Brady and what it means, Tom?
There were a lot of layers to that, and I think you saw a lot of those, Rich, kind of come out over the past several days here, whether it was Josh Allen talking about how much Ken Dorsey meant to him and how much it hurt. Joe Brady, his interim replacement, saying, I'm only here because of Ken Dorsey, and I love that guy to death. Sean McDermott did something that you don't always hear, which is, you know, he kind of pulled back the curtain. He said the quiet part out loud when he was addressing reporters later on Tuesday, hours after making that move. And he was repeatedly asked, why did you have to do this? And he said, we're going to be back in that locker room in the stadium in 5 days. And I need players to walk in there knowing something has changed. That's a pretty direct way of saying we can't cut all the players who are dropping footballs and fumbling. We're not going to cut the quarterback who is missing guys who are open around the field and isn't playing like Josh Allen. The one thing you can do at this stage in the season on a team that you still feel is a contender is to try to create a sea change, is move on from the guy calling the plays. And Ken Dorsey, you know, he was respected. He was really liked by players. He's meticulous. He is super smart. There are probably times where, like a lot of young coaches, he doesn't necessarily see the big picture in things in terms of how his offense is playing to the other strengths of the team, the game flow and things like that. But this was not a strict Ken Dorsey issue. If you go back to that game in Buffalo on Monday night, Rich, I find myself asking that next day, if they don't give up those two big passes when you got zero blitz on, and if they don't have a 12th man on the field goal and they just win the game by a point, are you still moving on from Ken Dorsey? This was reactionary. I think that that's objectively true, but it's also a reaction Sean McDermott felt that he had to make. There just was not a lot of energy and juice in that offense. They're hoping Joe Brady is going to give it, and I'll be fascinated to see, given how Joe Brady, you know, all that was said about him coming out of LSU, how smart he was. Remember, he interviewed Rich for like 5 head coaching jobs.
Right.
The first year in Carolina, even though they weren't good on offense, Matt Rhule was really involved in that scheme, all the way down to what a play is called and things like that. Eventually, Matt Rhule coming back from the bye week fired Joe Brady. If Sean McDermott is a little bit more hands-off and lets Joe Brady go to work, I'm interested to see what this offense will look like.
Yeah, Brady was the hottest coordinator on the market coming off of the Joe Burrow 60-touchdown season, you know, and he wound up in Carolina, and we were all in the media saying, great hire by Matt Rhule, and here they go, and we all know what's happened since then. So I'll ask you the question I've been asking a whole bunch of others this week. What is your interpretation of Trevon Diggs' tweet during the game involving his brother and referring to him by his uniform number, needing to get up out of there? What do you make of that one?
I would say this, Rich. The Diggs brothers have mastered the art of saying things that are just cryptic enough on social media that they're going to get a lot of attention. And this wasn't even all that cryptic. This was 14 needs to get up out of there and saying, you know, the quarterback didn't go off until Diggs got there. You know, those guys, they do like to stir it up. Trayvon's got a lot of time on his hands because he's rehabbing from that torn ACL that he suffered earlier this season. But it's a storyline. Listen, I was sitting in that seat, Rich, with boys. Hey, what's up to the fellas in studio?
Hey, I always know.
Yep,
we were there. I was there this summer when Diggs, remember, wasn't out there the first day of minicamp. And you had this really weird sequence of events where McDermott was explaining things one way, then he had to come back, and then his agent countered all that, and then McDermott had to correct the record. There's been something going on there. The reality was, though, the Bills were never going to trade Stephon Diggs. They couldn't. The cap implications, even if they wanted to, were so great. And he's also, quite frankly, one of your best players. And you need Stephon Diggs on that team right now. I got no doubt that Diggs is frustrated. He's an all-time competitor. His heart is in a good place, but he likes a little bit of the drama sometimes. His brother's stirring it up. I wouldn't expect him to shy away from it, but these sides are together through the course of this season. They got to do their best to try to make a run here. You know, whether they do or they don't, we'll be talking about Stephon Diggs again come February and March.
Tom, you're the man. Greatly appreciate it. Go back to the insiders on NFL Network and NFL Plus, and we'll do it again next week. Appreciate the time.
Sounds great, Rich. Thanks.
You got it. That's Tom Pelissero right here on the Rich Eisen Show. You got that Josh Allen soundbite we didn't play yesterday? Please go grab it if you don't mind. Because, again, this is – we could sit here and speculate, you know, what McDermott is putting all out there on the line. I mean, Marshall Faulk on What the Football said it was, you know, desperate because he got rid of – he was the first one on that – on the podcast, by the way, with Susie Schuster, Amy Trask. Get it, we're all podcasts are acquired. He was the first one to basically say, well, he got rid of Leslie Frazier last year. And when I heard that on What the Football, I'm like, that's right. That's why he's walking around the hallways of NFL Network right now. And so he got rid of the DC, got rid of the OC. I believe Albert Breer in yesterday's show called it, he's the Will Smith GIF. And he wasn't referring to the Oscars. He was referring to him at the end of Fresh Prince walking into the empty
living room.
Right. Everyone's moved around. Out. Like, okay. I'm the last one here. And so we could sit there and say McDermott's now placed himself. There's no one else. Like, if he says that he wanted everyone in that building to know in 5 days when they walk back in or whatever that something's changed, maybe the Pegulas will wind up feeling that way about him if this doesn't work out. And the if this doesn't work out is if there is no improvement in the offense. And let's just be straight up. Josh Allen throwing 11 interceptions, one more than Mac Jones on the year, is a large part of it. And it's not always him, right? This is kind of like the conversation, TJ, we had about Dak last year, right? Like one last week, he threw one terrible one, Allen. And then he threw one that went off of Gabe Davis's hands, which is on his sheet. All right. Bottom line, it really is, how is Josh Allen going to improve? Period. End of story. How is he going to attack this day? And this was what he had to say about the firing of Ken Dorsey. And I find it an interesting soundbite. Let's hit it, please.
You mentioned a little bit feeling like if you guys had played better, Ken Dorsey would still have his job.
I mean, that's without a doubt. You know, and I take that very personally. You know, it hurts. It hurts a lot to see someone you care about go through a situation like that. And to know that, you know, if I could have done more, if this offense could have done more, we wouldn't have had to do something like that. So, again, it's an unfortunate series of events that have led up to it. And but again, like, as much as you can sit here and feel sorry for yourself and you can sulk on what's going on, we got a game to prepare for, and it's 4 days away, so we can't pay too much attention to it. We got to focus on what we can control, and that's our attitude and efforts every time we step on this field and practice and walkthroughs and meetings and make sure that we're going to be prepared to go come Sunday.
I mean, attaboy. That is a – I mean, talk about an honest answer, you know? You're right. I think about it. It hurts because if we did play better, but, you know, we have a job to do and they got to win. And you can't sit around and dwell on it. I thought that was such a revealing soundbite and a very clearly, emotionally aware individual, which is what you need for a quarterback. We just need to get that Mandalorian guy back. Remember, that's how I started referring to him?
Yep.
We need that guy back. We need that guy who was moving the offense crisply. As soon as the play was over, here he comes again, and he's going to be difficult to sack. He's going to extend the play, and he's going to jam it right down your throat with his arm and with his legs, and we need to see that guy back. The question is he physically ready to do it? Is he physically, you know, 100% enough to do it. And if I'm Joe Brady, that's what I'm going to try and do. And, you know, certainly if the coach is going to let him be, all this stuff of just be careful, slide and all that. Of course, you need to slide, but let's get Josh Allen just running down people's throats. Actual running plays for Allen again. And then when you get that mojo back, then you can do other stuff. Yeah, that's Mike Hoskins, our Bills loving coordinating producer, dialing up him leaping over people. That's the Allen we need to see. And I think that's the Allen the rest of his team will respond to. And give me at least 3 to 4 touches in the first drive of number 14. Get him going. That's what I would do. Now, obviously, the defense that he's playing against this week knows it and is really ready to prevent it. What a big game this is. But I just thought it was such an emotionally aware thing for him to say.
But Rich, wasn't at the beginning of the season, Chris also, you know, at the end of last season, didn't people all say that Josh Allen shouldn't do as much running?
No, I know that. And I know that was what it was coming
in.
That's exactly right. And I was saying that they fixed that problem because they got Latavius Murray and they got Damian Harris and they got Dalton Kincaid. And it took Dalton Kincaid half a season, as it happens with rookies, to start getting that guy done. And then that now, you know, Harris is gout. Let's see Fournette, right?
Yeah.
And so be that as it may, didn't work. Scrap it.
So go back to
OC out, new OC in. Let's see it. Let's go. What do you got to lose here? Except the season and then maybe the HC his gig. 844-204-RICH, number to dial. Here comes Ric Flair in studio. Let's do it.
Woo!
Don't you dare move. He showed me a text back there that is lit. I can't wait to talk to him about it. It's that time of year, people. Spring has sprung, and that means spring cleaning, or at least the partner in your life is demanding that you do it. Whether that means stocking up on cleaning supplies or swapping out your winter clothes for new spring clothes, make sure you're using Ibotta and get real cash back with every purchase. Ibotta is a free app that gives you the most cash back every time you shop on hundreds of items from groceries to beauty supplies to toys. The average Ibotta user earns $256 per year. That could cover the cost of an entire shopping trip, that flight you've been eyeing, or the fancy dinner you've been craving. Join the over 50 million users and earn cash back every time you shop from over 2,700 brands and retailers. And right now, Ibotta is offering our listeners $5 for just trying Ibotta by using the code EISEN when you register. Just go to the App Store or Google Play Store and download the free Ibotta app to start earning cash back and use my code EISEN. That's IBOTTA in the Google Play or App Store and use my code EISEN. Let's talk Sleep Number, people, because quality sleep is so essential. That's why the Sleep Number smart bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, and the same thing for your partner, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side, helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature, quiets your snores or your partner's? Sleep Number does that. My Sleep Number setting is 60. My wife's is 70. 10 numbers apart, but it truly is the world of difference. The Sleep Number sleep that you get is unbelievable. You will love it. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now you could save 50%. That's 50%. On the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com. Tonight, live on TNT, AEW Collision and AEW Full Gear takes place this Saturday night live on pay-per-view. Both events emanate live from the Kia Forum in Los Angeles, California, just up the road from NFL Network, as a matter of fact.
That's right.
The great, brilliant Nature Boy himself, Ric Flair, is here on the Rich Eisen Show. Let's go.
Woo!
Thank you. How are you, sir?
I'm great. Thank you.
This is great, isn't it?
This is great.
To TJ, what are you wearing right now, TJ?
Well, you know, I had to get my suit from Michael's in Kansas City. I had to get that shipped up because the Nature Boy was in town. And, of course,
I should have really gotten tricked out for you today.
You look great.
Your presence is enough, sir.
Yes. Indeed. So you're going to be at the Kia Forum, obviously, yes. right? Mm-hmm. You're going to be involved in all
yes.
that?
Hope so.
Of course you will. You know exactly what
you're just playing the game, man.
Do you know what you're going to say right now? Do you know what you're going to say right now? Or just comes
no,
off
I don't
the
know.
Dome?
I haven't
just
heard.
Comes off the dome.
It, well, that used to, but now they prefer to, you know, make sure that I understand the script, Rick. There's something you can't say that you used to say in the 80s.
A little too much nature?
Yeah.
Oh, my
Slow
gosh.
Down. You're moving way too fast, Rick.
And then you got your energy drink, the official energy drink of AEW. And what's it called, Rick? What's it called?
Woo Energy.
Woo!
Mushroom infused. The healthy mushrooms. Yes.
The healthy mushrooms, of course. Shiitake.
Have you go all night long?
I don't know. I have no idea. I'm not really a mushroom guy. Again, it's for All Elite Wrestling taking place tonight on TNT and AEW Full Gear, a pay-per-view event on Saturday night. We had Tony Khan here a few months ago, and we're big AEW fans here on the Rich Eisen Show. Couldn't be more excited to have Ric Flair, Nature Boy, here on this program. As we're back with our radio audience now on the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network, I'm sitting at the Rich Eisen Show desk furnished by Grainger with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger has the right product for you. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by as Ric Flair, Nature Boy, has done. It is really great to see you. How did Woo come about for the first time? What's the origin of that record?
It's just driving down the road one night, listening to Jerry Lewis back in the 70s. Goodness gracious, Great Balls of Fire, Woo.
That was it?
It kind of inspired me. Yeah, I was a big fan of his. And that's back in the 70s. We used to drive 3,000 miles a week in old town to town.
Sure.
And I just started saying it in 1974, and it stuck.
So
thank God.
Do you remember the first time you used it?
And it would have been in a promo in 74.
Okay.
At Jim Crocker Promotions.
Okay. And did somebody just say, you got to keep that? Or you just
no,
decided?
No, I just caught on. And then now it's like, everybody in the world's doing it, and I'm not getting paid enough. It's trademarked.
I mean, you must walk down the street and just hear it.
Yeah,
right?
I do. Thank God.
What's the strangest place you've had somebody scream that to you?
Oh, God, they're screaming everywhere. I mean,
like where? Church? Bathrooms? Where?
Oh, not at church, but maybe outside of church, but bathrooms for sure. Woo, Ric Flair in the bathroom. Oh, wow, man.
Somebody guys. Makes a boom boom and behind the door and screaming, woo.
Nah, I'm not going to shake your hand when we get out of here, okay? Jesus. It's unbelievable.
Oh, my gosh. Fantastic. And so what do you remember most of those early days in your career, Rick?
Oh, just, you know, the thing that it's like I've found it again here, just the day I walked in here, it's a camaraderie. I just love being with the guys.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like a disease with me. I mean, I just like being with the guys, and I like going in front of a live audience. I like, you know,
mm-hmm.
It's like now I'm right back in the same business where, just like you wait every day. I don't know how hard you sit on it or not, because you have people to handle it for you, but you just want to know the rating. Mm-hmm. You want to know what your quarter hour did. I mean,
it's
back in the race, yeah.
Yeah.
So at 5 o'clock, whatever day I'm on the next day, like I've been doing my whole life,
mm-hmm.
5 o'clock looking for the rating, and what did my quarter hour do? I mean, that's, you know, it's competition.
What's your favorite place you performed in where you love it more than most, Ric Flair?
I there have been so many great cities. I used to wrestle at the Forum out here and run into Kareem and Magic and all those guys, and
yeah.
I mean, James Worthy, he grew up in Charlotte, basically.
Yeah.
I liked it out here. Chicago was great. Atlanta's great.
Yes.
Of course, North Carolina, and that's where I was for 42 years, anywhere there.
Mm-hmm.
Orlando's great. I mean, it's hard to pick one out. Mm-hmm. Overseas, of course, I like Tokyo and London, Birmingham are great.
Yeah.
Sydney and
you've all been all over the world, man.
Auckland, New Zealand, name it.
TJ is one of your hugest fans, and I always do this. TJ, go for it. Ask Ric Flair a question.
You know,
go
it's like it. How do you come up with a single question to ask someone
have
who's
to.
Been in your life since, you know, I was 10 years old.
Yeah.
You know, and Saturday nights at 6:05, Rick. That was was it for me and my grandfather. Yeah. But
we did that at 8 o'clock in the morning. You know.
I read that,
after coming on a Buckhead.
What do you mean? So you really?
We tape that show at 8 o'clock in the morning. We were working in a venue somewhere when it was airing.
Yeah.
That night.
Wow. So, I mean, Rick, at what point, and, you know, I've read your book multiple times. I've seen the documentaries, things of that nature. But when did you know? Do you remember the point when you were like, okay, I got this now?
The second time I won the world title.
So from Harley at Starcade?
At Starcade, yeah. The first time I won it, I thought I knew it all. Boy, did I find out. Because I'd been wrestling really good wrestlers mm-hmm. in the Mid-Atlantic area, like top guys. And when I won the world championship, and I started traveling around where the guys weren't nearly as experienced, some weren't as experienced as I was, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you have to wrestle an hour every night, which we did back then. And I just learned real fast that I had a lot to learn. But second time around, I was ready, and I was ready, you know, be prepared for, you know, whatever situation arose. And then from there, but just, I just rock and rolled. Once I found my groove, which I think it's the same way with anybody, whether you're in medicine or in broadcasting, you find your groove. And
yeah,
I mean, look at Rich Eisen. I mean, I've wanted to be on your show forever.
Oh, stop, Rich.
No, I swear. I saw my daughter on it. How did my daughter get up? Rich Eisen, I'm not. I was across the street with the Migos, and you had her in Miami at the Super Bowl.
That's right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I come to ask you, what do you do with Rich Eisen?
We heard you're in town. We're like, Ric Flair's in town. You want him on Friday? I mean, how quickly? That was a snap, yes?
That was a snap, yes, for sure.
Even a faster snap for me, yes.
Oh, fantastic. So I'd love for you to tell me a story about somebody that you wrestled with or you got to know through another legend who affected you or became a friend of yours or somebody from...
Well, one of the reasons I'm back here now with AEW is that my friend Sting, mm-hmm. legendary Sting, I'm sure TJ knows Sting, right, in our history, is retiring. And I'm going to be part of the journey till he retires. It's either in March or April.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just part of the journey along the way with him. And then... whatever transpires after that, like Pedro Morales, remember that name, Pedro?
Sure.
Uh-huh. I'm ready for any kind of action.
You got an Andre the Giant story?
I traveled with Andre. I drove him around.
What do you mean you drove him around?
He started in Minneapolis.
Okay.
He came from France to Montreal. He came to Minneapolis mm-hmm. and trained with Vern Gagne when I was there.
Mm-hmm.
So Vern had me driving him around when he was just... John Ferrer. It wasn't Andre the Giant yet, right?
Right.
And
so he just stuffed himself into the front seat?
Yeah, in the back seat.
Oh, back seat.
Yeah, but I just drove him like Chicago and that. I took him out on Rush Street. It was a great time.
What in the world is that like, Ric Flair taking Andre the Giant on Rush Street?
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. I have been on a 747 with him, Rich.
Mm-hmm.
I've the two most famous stories. And I know that... That aside from him, we got what 300 passengers, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he drank every bottle of vodka on the plane on a 747 going to Tokyo. Every mini bottle on the plane. I mean, I know other people are drinking it too, but let's get serious. Who runs out of vodka, right? And then it switches to something else.
What does a mini bottle look like in Andre the Giant's hands?
Yeah, I know, but they don't do that, but they used to give you mini bottles and you'd pour your own drink.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, unbelievable. Size 24 ring. And then I was with him one night at the Downtowner in Charlotte in 74 when he, 75 when he drank 106 beers. Yeah.
That's unbelievable. That's
who counted? You counted?
No, here's what happened is it was getting so ridiculous. He went one after another, right? And he was with Frank Valois, myself, and a guy named Ivan Koloff.
Mm-hmm.
And we were there drinking, and he just, pretty soon the bartender just said, I'm not believing this. Right? He said, let me separate this out because Andre was drinking one beer and everybody else was drinking. I think he was drinking like regular Miller, not Miller Lite, around then. And we were drinking something else.
Mm-hmm.
So he just separated it out. And Frank Valois drank 56, his manager at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And Andre drank 106.
Yeah. It's a lot of bottles on the wall.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that's from that's from 10 o'clock until like 4 in the morning. Yeah. Listen, guys, he could go.
and you could go, Rick. I mean?
Could go too. I mean, but I was not, I can't hold that much beer. I can hold a lot of liquor. But,
Oh, man. Ric Flair here on the Rich Eisen Show. All right, let's get into it. Perfect day for you to be here because all of us Harbaugh lovers, we got a band together, man.
Yes.
How'd you meet Jim?
I met Jim in 1989. He came to watch me wrestle with Brad Muster. And in 89, he was playing quarterback for the Bears. And he came to Chicago, Chi-Town Heat.
So you've known him forever. You go way back.
I met him that night, right? And then he had me come. It was a strange moment. He called the WWE and wanted me to come talk to the 49ers prior to the Green Bay game.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody was supposed to know, right? So now my friend Kevin Green, who has passed away but yes. not in the Hall of Fame, is a linebacker coach. And he called me and said, I heard you're in Green Bay. So what are you doing here? I said, I'm thinking about coming to the game. And then of course, the word got out that I gave him that pep talk and all. It made national news. Steve Smith took my robe and tore it up. Or Steve got mad because it was like I was going against the Panthers, right?
Yeah,
and
then, right.
Kevin Green texted me, say it's not so. I said, unfortunately, that's Kevin, but it's just my job. The WWE sent me. So it wasn't personal, and Kevin wasn't really mad, but it was one of those deals that just, in an awkward position to be in.
Sure, but Harbaugh's your guy. You go back.
Yeah,
and,
I know,
you know.
God, I love him. I just went and saw him literally a week and a half ago.
How was he?
Great. That game face on.
Okay.
His assistant said, this is the happiest I've seen him in 4 days.
Is that right?
Yeah. Well, it's been tough. I mean, I'm just so disappointed. Because if you know Jim Harbaugh, if you know his family, his brother, I mean, God,
right. Jack,
just a quality guy, and I'm glad John won last night. It just
right,
and these people it's like a witch hunt. I mean, I don't want him to leave Michigan, but I wouldn't blame him at all if he did.
Well, I mean,
just to get out of the scrutiny, my God.
Yeah, but I mean, scrutiny is gonna scrutiny finds him everywhere.
Yeah,
no matter
could be
where he is,
he's good.
Well, I don't want him to leave.
Well, I don't want him to. Either,
I mean, the kids on this program right now, Rick, they're as great as they've ever
been.
And it's I don't want to hear. I mean, obviously, what was going on with this ticket, whatever the scheme was going on for scouting, in person scouting, and whatever, the kids are. He's put together an outstanding,
unbelievable team.
Right. So that's the way I'm looking at it.
They're gonna spank everybody on the way through. I hope they end up spanking Georgia.
I'll
find one on the sidelines, me on one sideline and him on the other.
No, let's talk about this because you showed me this in the green room. So Feinbaum texted you? Is it what you're saying?
Rick? I tweeted. What happened was it was on either Get Up or First Take, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So they brought up Feinbaum, Paul, who I know, and when he first had me on the show was, well, we have the great Ric Flair, not so much anymore. So he is actually jousting with
Desmond.
Yeah. And I mean, he literally, I was a big, we won the Big Ten twice. He said, oh, in the Southeast Conference, we don't even count a Big Ten championship. I mean, it's an insult to the whole Big Ten. I mean, really, he shouldn't be allowed to drive into any state with a Big Ten school.
Mm-hmm.
Who says that? I mean, he's jousting like he knows more about the football than Desmond Howard, the guy that won the Heisman Trophy. Remember,
I hear you.
And MVP, and it's unbelievable. So I tweeted out, "You got to be kidding me! A non-athletic analyst from the Southeast Conference jousting with Desmond Howard? I don't think so. Shame on you." He sent me a note. He took it personal.
He sent you a note saying
basically it said, "Hi, Paul Feinbaum here. So sorry that you've lost so many fans in the South." Okay, I don't know where that, but I just said
you're embracing Harbaugh
and embracing Harbaugh and ditching Kirby Smart. I go, okay, that made a lot of sense.
Wow.
So I just said, all I took to text back was,
well,
apparently not everybody agrees, sir.
Well, speaking as it's somebody unathletic, you know, we should be able to say whatever we want to say.
Yeah.
I just got to push back for those, you know, follically challenged unathletic people in front of a microphone.
I'm just saying.
But that said, you know, does he have your number or he got
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I've been on his show. I'm his friend.
Okay.
Yeah, I was. No, but I didn't mean, it wasn't about being athletic, but okay. I mean, he literally was insulting. You know, I've never seen, I watch your show religiously. I've never seen you talk bad. If Desmond Howard was sitting here, would you actually argue with him about football?
No, I wouldn't.
Thank you. That's why you're successful. And look at this. This is better than Joe Rogan's layout here, by the way, ladies and gentlemen. If you're not here,
this is a great spot.
These headquarters are beautiful.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
And so happy for your success.
On the biggest hill, on the biggest side of town. In the biggest backyard.
Would you mind doing us the favor of cutting a Rich Eisen show promo?
I absolutely will.
Would you do it like right now? Yep. Can you do it right now if I just set it up like Ric Flair? Yep. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, this is it. We're ready. Ric Flair, a promo for the Rich Eisen show.
This is the Nature Boy Ric Flair. Woo! Live from Rich Eisen Studio in L.A. Looking as only I can look. Praising the great Rich Eisen, the man, the myth, the legend, the limousine riding, I'm sure of it, private jet flying, kiss stealing, willing dealing, son of a gun that owns the airways every time he opens his mouth. Woo! Rich Eisen.
Yes.
That's it. We were talking about it beforehand. Like, you know,
shut
we got to get.
Yeah, Rich was like, should we write something? Rick don't need no writers.
Oh, he's the best there is.
So
one take Nate.
Of course. The Woo Energy drink can be found at it's WooEnergy.com. But hold on a minute. I gotta make sure everyone knows there's five O's in Woo Energy. So it's W5O'sEnergy.com.
Yeah, and by the way, it's the official drink of the Michigan Wolverines.
Now I know. Everybody thought it was because of the signs and whatever. Now I know what's going on.
Yep.
All right. Well, thanks for coming in here, Rick.
Thank you. Honored.
Sir, please stop, man. We are.
No, I was so upset that my daughter was on your show and I wasn't.
Well, I said, now we're tied at one apiece.
Yeah. Actually, wherever you are, I finally made it to the big time.
That's right. Yeah, right. And there's a race to break the tie.
Charlotte.
AEW Collision takes place tonight on TNT. AEW Full Gear takes place Saturday. On pay-per-view, both events coming from the Kia Forum in Los Angeles, California. The great Ric Flair, Nature Boy. Great to see you, Ric Flair.
Thank you.
Another man.
Thank you.
Right here on the Rich Eisen Show. We're back with more in a moment. Let's talk O'Reilly Auto Parts, people, or as you might know from their jingle, O-O-O O'Reilly Auto Parts. They're in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offers friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. Because you know when you need your car fixed, you need somebody who knows what they're talking about and is helpful, has a smile on their face, and gets you back on the road. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. The team at O'Reilly Auto Parts can test your battery for free in or out of your car. If it needs to be replaced, they'll help you just find the right battery for your vehicle. Need your windshield wipers replaced, a brake light fix, or a quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. Whether you're a car aficionado or an auto novice, you will find the employees at O'Reilly Auto Parts knowledgeable, helpful, and the best of all, friendly. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com/Eisen. That's O'ReillyAuto.com/Eisen.
Afford Anything talks about how to avoid common pitfalls, how to refine your mental models, and how to think about how to think.
Paula, while certainly you can mess up on $1 million a year, it is far less likely than it is on $30,000 a year.
Right.
I would meet wonderful people that were struggling with a budget that was super tight. It was 100%. You need to make more money.
Make smarter choices and build a better life.
Afford Anything, wherever you listen.
What could you do? Like, what's the move that you could actually
perform?
Oh, man.
You know what? I can kick a guy in the nuts without actually kicking him in the nuts.
Yeah, I'm going to pass on that.
Hold on a minute.
No, it's my party trick. I guarantee you, I won't hurt you.
So, is this
I'll take my pain kickers off.
Could this be sanctioned? Can she try to
kick? Yeah.
Okay.
Literally.
Who would volunteer for this work?
Come on. You just have to spread your legs. And okay. Wish for the best.
Mike, Del Tufo.
I mean, we'll both do it.
What are we about to attempt to do right here?
Kick him in the nuts.
Without actually hurting him.
Yeah, exactly.
But you will make contact.
I'll make contact, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, but you will not hurt him.
No.
Well, it doesn't matter. You have no desire to have children anyway.
No, I'm good. Yeah, okay. Exactly.
WWE Superstar Paige.
We'll see.
Do we have the, go ahead and hit it there, Jenny. Here we go.
All right, spread him for me. Okay, ready? If I was you, I'd pull your shorts up a little bit just so I can have a bullseye. You know
there we go.
Got it. Jeez.
All right, ready?
This is great.
We'll see if this works or not.
She's laughing.
This
I don't know.
I know.
All right, Paige, have at
ready?
It. Superstar Paige. Here we go.
There we go.
I just slapped him
no
on the butt.
Contact.
Yeah.
You're up next.
That was a good slap on this.
Yes.
Yeah.
Chris is up next.
Uh-oh.
Ready? Spread him.
You're the one who was making fun of her. So there we go.
Oh! It just hurts on your butt.
Are you serious? Are you serious, Chris?
Oh. I'm selling it.
Oh! Yeah. Vince McMahon, take note. Yeah. All right, fight with my family. Fight with my family.
I'm sorry.
Go check it out.
It was like.
Well done. Fantastic.
Ah, yes. We've been all over the wrestling world for the last several years, huh?
Yeah.
Back here on the Rich Eisen Show, you could stream the NFL on Westwood One for free, sponsored by AutoZone, everybody. All season long, you can listen to every Westwood One broadcast of the NFL live on the NFL app by asking Alexa to open Westwood One Sports or on your Westwood One affiliate station's digital platforms. Kevin Harlan, Kurt Warner with the call, certainly this Monday night from Kansas City, and then me in the Monday Night Football studio all season long for free. And get in the zone with AutoZone. The free AutoZone Fix Finder service can help you find a fix for free. Restrictions apply. Get in the zone, AutoZone. All right, I am completely biased when it comes to sideline reporters. I'm married to one.
Yes,
I remember the times when Suze was doing the Saturday games on ABC, mm-hmm. Some of the college football games. Tirico was in the booth, there were a handful of other analysts that she was working with, too. She worked with Gary Thorne. She worked with some great announcers. And Suze would be on the phone all week long, learning about players and their stories. That's how we first met Sean Merriman. She covered Sean Merriman's story in Maryland and got to know him and got like photographs from his mom and all that stuff. And then it would be somewhat frustrating for her to be straight up with you about how she wouldn't get on the air sometimes and tell these stories that she was ready to tell because the game cadence didn't call for it. And then frequently, you know, it would be boiled down to, is somebody hurt or not? Remember one time she called a game in Colorado, Nebraska. There was a fight going on in the stands, you know? I mean, she did it all, and it was just hard work, and she would fly out on a Wednesday and travel through 15 different small airports to get to places, but she loved it. My God, did she love it, because she loved the storytelling, and she loved the reporting, and she loved all of it, and she was great at it, you know? And now we're seeing her here, obviously, in this chair. And the reason why I say it is I'm biased, and I'm living with one very pissed off sideline reporter right now based on what Carissa Thompson said on the Pardon My Take podcast. Now, I first met Carissa when she was in the dues-paying part of her career. She was in the middle. She would be sitting there in the middle of the night at NFL Network doing updates and just sitting there doing nothing. And then, obviously, we've seen what she's gone on to do. And, you know, her saying to Big Cat and PFT that she sometimes, on occasion, would make stuff up because coaches were apparently not talking coming out of halftime. And then, you know, today she put out a statement that it's the elephant in the room. It sure is. I have a responsibility to myself and my employers to clarify what is being reported. When on a podcast this week, I said I would make up reports early in my career when I worked as a sideline reporter before I transitioned to my current host role. Working in media, I understand how important words are, and I chose the wrong words to describe the situation. I'm sorry. I've never lied about anything or been unethical during my time as a sports broadcaster. And then she wrote, in absence of a coach providing any information that I could further my report, I would use information that I learned and saw during the first half to create my report. For example, if a team was 0-for-7 on third down, that would clearly be an area they need to improve on in the second half. And these instances, I've never attributed anything I said to a player or coach, which, I mean, straight up, I have nothing but respect for sideline reporters and for the tireless work they put in behind the scenes and on the field. Something she did say, by the way, in the soundbite before the one that was disseminated. I'm only appreciative and humbled to work alongside some of the best in the business and call them some of my best friends. And I'm sure she's referring to her podcast mate, Aaron Andrews, who apparently on a podcast of theirs earlier, they both said that this is not the first time they had mentioned this type of reporting. And, you know, straight up, I mean, again, I just went all in on my alma mater earlier. That's not what she said on Part by Take. It wasn't like 0-for-7 this. It was using the coach speak and coach cliches as a space filler where she didn't need to fill any space. And that's the part of this that's so frustrating. And I don't blame the sideline reporters for being so upset, because they are not space fillers. They are not. I just came off of games with Jamie Erdahl and Stacey Dales and Sarah Walsh, and they worked their asses off. And that's what this glib comment about, yeah, you know, coaches weren't talking or whatever, so I just made it up. And she also said one time, I guess on her own podcast, that Rod Marinelli said something completely inappropriate. And so she just made something up because she's not going to call Rod out on the air, was the implication. And Susie was on the business end of that stuff too. Chuck Amato of NC State, one time she did a sideline report with him. She said, is there anything that you could see? You know, she's running off to the locker room at half. Is there anything that you see you can attack in the second half? And he looked at her and said, yeah, you. And then she ran after him, right, and asked more questions. And Gary Thorne even said, you know, she's running like Hudson, who was our dog at the time, you know. And it's a tough job. And anything that makes it seem like it's a space filler or anything else other than what it is, which is a crucial part of a broadcast with dynamite journalists, is beyond the pale. It's the only way to put it. And I'm assuming Carissa regrets it. She should be apologizing to everybody in the business right now, straight up. If that's in fact what she seemed to do, and that's what she said she did, and now that it's being appropriately called on the carpet. So, and everybody who was responding, well, I don't listen to sideline reporters anyway. It's like, okay, so you didn't want to know what was happening to Joe Burrow last night? You don't want to know about any of these stories? What's going on? Yeah, you do. And these people are doing that job. And anything, I don't blame them for going all in on this. So that's my two cents on the subject matter on that front. Hour number three, Rod Woodson coming up here on the show. And also, again, just so everyone understands the mechanics of it, sideline reporters aren't there, you know, just pouncing on coaches as they come out of the locker room. This is set up throughout the week. It's set up throughout the week. And in the production meeting, that was the last thing we said as a group to Belichick before he left our production meeting. He's like, hey, Sarah's going to talk to you after, you know, your halftime coming out on the field, second half. Cool with that? Yeah. Some of them, we say, can we do it on camera? And then some of them will say, no, not really. Or they'll say yes, and then they're getting their asses kicked, and they'll say no.
Right.
So there's no shame of any reporter not getting a coach. And I don't know of any producer that would put any pressure on somebody to do it if they didn't get it from the interview. So the whole thing is just terribly unfortunate. you know, and the whole, like, the Twitter pile-on is just as bad as what Carissa said. It's the glibness of it. And how every single sideline reporter, if anybody said anything glib about my job, damn straight I would tweet back at it.
Right.
Even if 25, 30 other hosts were tweeting about it, I would add my 2 cents because this is my livelihood. And I think deep down, Carissa knows that there's a bunch of people in the business that are rightfully pissed off. And there's a lot of healing to be done within our industry. I understand for sports fans, you might feel differently from your end of things. Hour 3 coming up.